Russ takes advantage of some marginally increased sunlight to attempt a second landing. Once again, hearts rise towards mouths as the engines slow and a blur of ice and snow and a pitch-black sea rises towards us. But once again, Russ snatches the plane from the ice at the last moment, and we soar away, relieved and cheated. I make a mental note never to complain about a landing ever again. Russ circles and banks the plane for another 15 minutes, patiently examining the floating ice for yet another attempt. This time, there is no pullout. 6 hours after leaving Eureka Base on Ellesmere Island, Canada, the wheels and skis of the Twin Otter find the ground, bounce, hit, swerve, slide, and finally grip the slithery hummocked surface. We're down and safe. I check the time on my watch and realise that at this point it could be whatever time I wanted it to be. Japanese time, Indian time, New York time, or London time, they're all the same at the pole. Home seems impossibly far away as we step onto a rough base of ice and snow. It looks secure, but water channels only a few yards away, and the fact that Russ will not risk switching off the aircraft engines in case the ice should split reminds us that this is a lethal landscape. Finding the highest point in the vicinity, a pile of fractured ice blocks soaring to 3.5 feet, I plant our North Pole, kindly loaned to us by the Canadians, and we take our photos. The air is still. The temperature is minus 25 centigrade. This is considered warm. After an hour's filming, we defer to Russ's polite impatience and return to the aircraft. Concerned about fuel, he then takes off quickly and unceremoniously, as if the North Pole were just another bus stop. We have planned to follow the 30-degree east meridian all the way to the South Pole. But straight away there are problems. There is only enough fuel left to reach the nearest airstrip, a Danish base in Greenland. Even this is 480 miles away and beyond radio range at the moment. We have no option but to fly in hope. It is a thirsty, underfed, cramped and exhausted little group that puts down at Nord Base Greenland with only 25 minutes of fuel left. We've been away from the rest of the world for 10 minutes short of 12 hours. There is not a soul to be seen. After what feels like an eternity, Russ returns with a young Danish soldier who is in a state of considerable shock. No one had told him we were coming. And it being 3 o'clock in the morning on the north coast of Greenland, 700 miles from the nearest settlement, a knock on the door must have been like the start of a horror movie. He bravely tries to laugh it off. Oh, we thought it could only be Father Christmas, before offering us what we're dying for, food and drink and a bed for the night. Day 2. The midnight sun is shining brightly when I climb into a bunk at 3:30 a.m. and equally brightly when I wake at 9:30. From mid-October, the sun will disappear below the horizon and not rise again until the end of February. But for now, in mid-May, day merges seamlessly into day. Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, a massive, almost uninhabited ice cap over 50 times the size of its mother country. The base at Nord is manned for the Danish government by 5 soldiers, but one of them is away, so Henny, Jack, Kent and Kenneth are running the place at the moment. 2 big supply planes come in each year, bringing all they need, fresh videos, books, food and drink, and equipment. Russ is unable to make contact with our next port of call, near Øresund in Spitsbergen, and the Danes say they will try and raise a weather forecast from the American base at Thule. This takes some time, but at midday the news comes through that the weather is good, and after refueling and repacking, we squeeze back into the Twin Otter. There are 325 miles between Greenland and the Svalbard Islands, of which Spitsbergen, Steep Mountains, as it was named by the Dutch who discovered it 400 years ago, is the largest. Part of Norway since 1925, it is for us an important stepping stone between the North Pole and Europe, and the first place where we hope to do without aircraft and continue our journey by land and sea. Below us, a mixture of black, clear water channels, pale blue icebergs, and various shades of frozen and refrozen ice give the Greenland Sea a mottled effect. But as we cross the Greenwich Meridian and enter the Eastern Hemisphere, the effect of a warm current pushing up from the Atlantic changes the scene dramatically. The ice melts away, and thick